Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travelled to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast would not happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to become a socio, to become one of our members, and get an extra big interview every month, plus loads of bonus content. So go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter, patreon.com/Graham Hunter, and we'll bring you joy.
This is part two, second part of Jimmy Bullard on The Big Interview. Welcome back. In this section, Jimmy and I talked a great deal about what you could call football theory, football ideas, football psychology, why he played the way he did, how he thinks managers perceived him, and why that changed throughout his career. We also talk a little bit about where English football might be going. Asterisk, warning, upwards, towards success. We didn't get necessarily very deep into Wigan's surge into the Premier League or his time at Fulham and Ipswich and Hull, but the one area of his career that we did stop off on to luxuriate in were those early days after West Ham plucked him out of non-league football and he went from painting and decorating to going to work at his beloved boyhood club alongside one player who had a huge impact on him and who you'll hear about a lot. Paulo Di Canio is coming again. Please forgive us for a slight dip in our normal sound quality. It's the first time in 97 interviews we've done this remotely, and we will iron things out as we continue to record during the quarantine to keep you entertained via The Big Interview. Thanks for being there. And in the meantime, ladies, once again, Mr. James Bullard, he's a topper.
In your career, you got, you know, chopped a lot, and it's off and on the pitch because famously you played for Barry Fry, who might only come up to your kneecaps, but you'd have done your kneecaps. But you don't strike me as being somebody who lost his temper much, and I ask that because in that match, focusing on the two guys you idolised, especially Zidane, I don't know if you remember, at the end of the match, Raul's nicking around in the penalty box and a guy called Kike Alvarez tries to do it. And it's 2-1 at Real Madrid. There's 4 or 5 minutes left. Kike Alvarez tries to do Raul, and Zidane's 20 metres away. And he sees it. And just like when he headbutted the Hamburg player for Juventus, or when he headbutted Materazzi in Berlin, I was there that day. He goes, I'm not fucking having that. And in his teams, there's a big brawl, and he gets sent off, and blah, blah, blah. And you know, he was sent off a lot in his career. It was 3 red cards in that game that we're talking about. Did you ever have a problem with your temper? Did you ever, when somebody, I know that, let's not go into the pain of the Scott Park challenge, because that, yeah, you established that happens in football. But people came looking for you quite a lot on and off the pitch. Was that something you were easy to skip away from, or your temper rose?
It's another good question, and it's something that I learned, again, myself, how to manage. I learned at a young age, I think just before I come into the pro game, that Jimmy Bullard, like, this is how I like to dissect that. I used to play and I used to behave on the pitch. One, I had a strict dad. My dad used to always say to me, Jim, if I see you arguing with a referee, I'll almost disown you. I had a really strict dad. I almost fell out of my dad a lot of times. And it's like, I don't want to see you arguing with your players. I don't want to see you arguing with your manager. I don't want to see any aggravation. He was football, football, football. Everyone will protect you. The referee's there to do one job. My rapport with referees was unbelievable. I'm going off on one here. Just bear with me, right? So that being that was that. As a person, I found very quickly that Jimmy Bullard plays at his best being as happy as I possibly can. So I would play, it seemed like a no-fear, happy. I'd almost be this character on the pitch. I'd portray this character that nothing fazes me. I am a footballer playing in front of these. Let's entertain. If I'm 5-0 down, don't worry about it. The world's going to be all right. Jimmy's going to be all right. Football club, let's really enjoy the situation and make fun out of it. And me being the joker Jimmy that everyone knew me as and still knows me as, a little bit of a character. Only I call it an extension of myself. So an extension of myself, it's like when Ronaldo goes on the pitch and he acts as this statue and he's, that's an extension. Is he like that every day? No, he ain't like that every day. It'd wear him out. But it's an extension. I was the joker. So to answer your question, I never had an argument on the pitch. Very rare I had an argument on the pitch. You ask every referee, I used to call them by their first name. I had a really good... So I used to manage that. I used to, like, enjoy, like... I used to wind players up. I used to have a bit of... If it was too much, no problem. And in that, Gray, I think it's very important that players respect players. You know, and players respect referees. I'm really of that ilk where my dad... side comes out of me and I play with that smile and that real intense bubbly character. But to dissect it, I learned that a very long time ago. That works for me, Gro. I'm not saying that works for everyone. Like, I like to use Wayne Rooney as a scout. I believe Wayne Rooney learned at a young age that he plays his very best when he's angry. When he's ready to rip someone's head off, Wayne Rooney plays his best. I'm the other end of the scale.
Like that goal against Newcastle, where he's still shouting at the referee as he fucks the ball in from 70 yards.
He's angry. But I've played against Wayne. I've played with Wayne. I've trained him. And when he's angry, he's phenomenal. If I played like that, I would be no... I'm too tense, Christ. I'm the other end. And there's always optimums. I always talk about optimums quite a lot. But you got to find your own optimum. Where do you best play at? Like my kid... My boy is totally opposite to me. He's too jovial. He doesn't know the seriousness of the game. So I've got to bring him down. I've got to anger him a little bit. I've got to find a bit of bite in him to get him passionate to go in, you know. I had to bring myself down a little bit. It's weird the way I manage that.
Now,
do you get where I'm going with that?
I claim this a little bit because I think you've evidenced, again, something I said early on, which I believe, which is that the more I listen to you, the more I watch you, you're a guy with a lot of self-knowledge. And self-knowledge is not something that's promoted in football. In other sports, it's essential. But in football, for a long time, we had an army culture. We just do as you're told. Self-knowledge wasn't promoted, and that goes for mental well-being, but it also goes, like, you could look at yourself as a highly tuned machine and go, like, if I'm playing angry, I'll do the wrong things. I won't in my peak. I think that's enormous to be able to know. And listen, I'm throwing praise at you because I mean it, and I'm not fucking about. We've got people who religiously watch this, and they send in questions. So Kevin says, it's good. I hope it's true. Jimmy, I just want to say I've seen you a few times throwing shapes in the bridge bar in Beckenham. Some good moves you've got there, mate. My question is, which ground did you go to that had the aura where you knew you were in for a tough game and who was the toughest opponent you faced? Go.
Okay, yeah, so bridge, we start off with a start quick. Bridge bar, yeah, that's my local. Me and my mates go there for a drink. And yeah, I do chuck some serious moves. So he's right on that one. I love getting on the floor. But to answer the... Yeah, I've got a bit. But to answer the question, it was Anfield. Going to Liverpool was, like, it's phenomenal. When I first heard, like, Never Walk Alone, that was phenomenal. And then they had the likes of Alonso, Gerrard. Who was up top? I think Torres was up top at that time. It's just, like, ridiculous teams, you know. That and also another ground... that was phenomenal was Leeds. Leeds away. You know, we had, when I was playing for Wigan, they was in a championship. We had a lot of ding-dong with Leeds, being only across the road, really, Leeds and Wigan not being far apart. And going to Elland Road, that was one that I can't wait to see them in the Premier League, hopefully, if they get there, because I believe they deserve to get that. It was just phenomenal. But then you had the likes, like the big grounds. I used to love Everton, how on top of you they was. Even driving into the likes of Everton, like down the little roads, like them sort of grounds. And then you get to the mecca grounds like Newcastle, what I call the big industrial grounds, Old Trafford, obviously, playing against like Giggs and players like that. That was like, but there was some phenomenal ground. I was so lucky to play. My mum always said to me, Jim, when you're going into these grounds, when doing what you're doing, it'll be quickly forgotten. So make sure you soak it up. Make sure you enjoy everything. Take in the whole experience, because when you're 35, this won't be here for you. And that was one thing that I really, really absorbed.
It's one of the reasons that we're on here, and there's two sections to go before we let you back to the garden. And they one of them links really specifically into that, because I'll come back to it, but everything you absorbed and what you felt about the importance of soaking it up, that comes out of you, it radiates. And it radiates still to this day, and I'll tell you why. But just a conversation. So you know what you share with Iker Casillas and what you said there? Because Iker's mum was a really good guide in his career. And he's a World Cup winning captain in Champions League, but she couldn't watch his games. And during Spain's run to the tournament wins they had, she fainted with the pressure on stage, and she was too nervous to watch him. She couldn't watch him.
That's my mum.
Yeah, mama. There you go. That's the link. Yeah,
that's unbelievable. Because my mum, Wigan, we reached a Carling Cup final against Man United. My mum has never watched me live. She can't even put on the teletext back in the day. Teletext. That's how long ago. Well, she can't even put on TV. She was like, Jim, she come to the final. I dragged 40 coach load, right? She watched me warm up and she walked straight outside and having a fag. She couldn't watch. She could not watch. She gets so nervous. She watched me for another game, Wigan, for 2 years. She come back later, right? And I'll tell you a little story. This was fun. Chelsea turned up at the JGB Stadium. And she see Chelsea get off the coach and she see Big Didier Drogba get off. And she said, is he playing against my little Jimmy? He's an absolute mountain of a man. And I was like, yes, yeah, mum. He's one of the... No, he's going to crush you. You make sure you're strong and all that. She gave me a right pep talk. That was fun.
But you've touched on something there that really struck me. I wrote it in one of the books that Neil and Martin published, but I mean it, and it's the truth. And there's no name dropping here. I was TV producer for Spain in the World Cup, and if you remember their first game, they lose to Switzerland, the World Cup that they win in 2010. They lose 1-0 to Switzerland. It's a shit goal. They don't have the date. And in the tunnel afterwards, I'm down literally in the players' tunnel, where TV people and journalists don't usually get. I mean, it's the most common a day thing for you. But to me, it's kind of like a holy sanctum, because you see things close up. And footballers often look smaller close up. But the Swiss, Iniesta had been taken off injured, and he was being helped to hobble out. And little Silva was one of the interview guys. The Swiss made them look like Lilliputians. Silva. And I, in that moment, irrespective of all the great football I'd seen in the years before, I was like, these guys cannot beat those guys. It can't happen. And yet they do. That's the phenomenal beauty of confidence, psychology, touch. Intelligence, that's to me what makes football just...
You're exactly right. I'd like to touch on as well. We spoke about styles. Now, I know we spoke about this quite a lot, haven't we? But I honestly don't believe, and Pep talks about this, there isn't one right way. I honestly believe if you get like a 15 giants and you want to play in the final third and you all believe in that and you work to, I think you could be dangerous. Do you get what I mean? I don't think there is one style. If you've got 16 absolute athletes that are ready to run through brick walls and you're all 6'4" and you all sort of play, you know, we've seen it when you need to score a goal in the last 5 minutes, that ball's getting shelled forward. Do you imagine playing that from the off? And you've got three units up top and you all believed in that. You could be dangerous. Like, I'm not sure a lot of teams can deal with that. So I don't believe there's one way. That's my way. That's the way I love. But I'm telling you now, look at Sam Allardyce, what he done with Bolton. Bolton back in the day were a bunch of absolute beasts, and they would go forward with a purpose, all believed in Sam. They'd mix it up a little bit because they had the Jean Caillet, but when they went forward, man, did they believe in it, and they were dangerous. I played against some real direct teams where you think, you're on for an hiding here, because they all believe in it. Like, and when you've got that, Gray, when you've got a team that all believe in what the manager's telling you, and you actually believe, if you're going to go, you could seriously hurt teams. Do you get what I mean? Because the percentages are taken out of your favour, because you ain't going to give it away in your third. And now you're all playing in that third. Do you get what I mean? So you, it can be dangerous. Both ways can be dangerous.
I grew up watching this lot, Aberdeen, and we, you know, in the 60s and 70s, we'd occasionally beat the big sides, or we might get to a cup final, occasionally we'd win. And then Alec Ferguson comes along and he teaches us what winning's about, and he shows us how it happens as fans, players, and the players educated me to want success and to believe that I could adapt. I did what you did with Sudan and Riquelme. I was like, if they can do that on the pitch, I can do that in life. And then we stopped winning, and we haven't won a lot for a long time. But I still, even in that model you've proposed, which I totally agree with, and I've heard Guardiola say time again, I wouldn't want to play Jack Charlton football. I wouldn't want to play the long ball merchants, yeah, where it's your percentages, because if I had to sit and watch it, then if your team wins a couple, it feels good. If you get a trophy, it feels phenomenal. But when that declines, when it goes wrong, you're still watching ugliness. You're still watching,
yeah,
that's where the ball's not important. And that's why I'll accept it. If somebody said to me, you can have 6 months and a trophy, I'll sign, yeah, but at the end of the 6 months, scrap it and begin again.
I'm like you, but that's our love, isn't it? But there's other people's love that want to see crash, bang, wallop. That is life, though. That's why we love the game, right? Everyone's so different, and they can love what they love. And that's our love. We love that technical, that closeness. Pop, 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 pop. We love that. But there's others on the terraces that want to see get up there. Fair enough. But
good luck,
when,
yeah,
I say long ball, there's more tactics. I'm, yeah, just trying to keep in a nutshell here. It ain't just about crushing it up. It's about being free kicks. It's about being cute. You know, I just don't want to say it's that raw. There's a lot more to it. There's a whole tactic behind long ball, as much tactic as Pep's side. Do you know what I mean?
Well, if Ederson releases one of his magnificent passes because Stones and Co have been sucking the other team in a little bit and playing around there, and instead of passing to Ederson's long ball, picks a runner, or if a long ball, Ederson takes a corner and he's like, I'm going to fuck this 60 yards because, yeah, they're not ready, that's good enough. That's not ugly. That's taking it advantage of the moment. And I think the blend is exciting. And I think the blend is coming in England because of years of new coaches, new players, but also years of Spanish football on TV. When your country won two junior World Cups in the space of 18 months under 17 and under 19 level, I watched footballers who were doing, it was like watching junior La Liga from 2005. And when that country's blend blends with what they've been taught about continental football at its best, you know, I expect to see England winning a tournament in my lifetime. I do.
We were behind. We learned from the continent. I believe we learned through Champions League, Ray. I really believe England, English teams had enough of a hiding. You know, there's a lot of people watching Champions League and we've gone, hang on a minute, they're far superior than us. They're putting a lot more odds in their favour. And as commentators, we've just gone, they're too good. And the whole process has changed over the last 10 years, you know, getting ironed out. And even if we win, Gray, it was more of a point, did we really deserve that? They've absolutely ironed us out here. On a percentage, if Chelsea played Barcelona over 10 leg or 10 matches, Barcelona win 8-2 or something. It'd be ridiculous. Back in the day, I believe that gap's getting closer. And I believe with the coaches coming over, slowly, slowly, it's getting drip-fed into us. Look at what Gareth Southgate's doing with the England team now. But as I say, I've watched so many commentators talk about, you must go forward at pace. No. I've watched so much football on the continent. Barcelona, I could get you clips. Barcelona played more sidewards and backwards more than anyone. They own possession more than anyone. And I know it's about going forward, but it's about going forward at the right times, not at the wrong times, picking your passes. And I'm fed up, Gray, right? I'm going to have a little rant here. I'm fed up of English commentators going, you must play on the front foot and go forward. I am a big believer in own the process first. Own the football. Because if you're going forward every time and you expect to score, every time you get it, forward, 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 You ain't going forward with quality, are you? You're going forward down rat holes that don't exist. Them coming over, the Klopps, the Pep. There's one manager I'd love to see, Simeone. We've got no chance because he's an absolute legend. If we see Simeone over here, what? How good is he for the Premier League, right? How good would he be for the Prem if we ever see him over? I know I've gone off on one again.
He's a twoser. What you have to believe is that Simeone is the guy who's brilliant man-to-man and his right-hand man, the ex-goalkeeper, who was pin thin as a player, got 23 stone, and now he's looking with pretty respect again, Mono Burgos. He's the tactical guy on the training pitch. You put them together. Mono Burgos can speak English. Simeone's been trying to learn English and can't. So if he goes to England, you're talking in a hypothetical situation. In a hypothetical situation, he'd educate people. He's 20 times the organiser that Mourinho ever was, and 20 times the little man that Mourinho ever was. He's a legend. He's an icon for fans to gather. It could be brilliant. Do I ever see it happening because he can't speak English? I probably don't, Jim. But if you look at probably the worst Atleti form since he took over, is still the form that's knocked the reigning European champions out in whatever fashion. And I think they wouldn't have been out if they had the right goalkeeper in goal. In my opinion, growing up, I've been taught this. I couldn't see it, but we weren't taught to be intelligent about football. I was born in the 60s. You weren't. You were born in what, 70s? I don't know. Nobody was talking about football intelligence and being analytical.
You're spot on there, right? And I know it's going to sound harsh, man. I played professional football from the age of 1920 to the age of 34. I can honestly, and I know I'm going to undermine a lot of managers here, and it's going to sound quite rude. I honestly, Roy Hodgson was one manager that pricked my ears. And he was the first manager. All my career, what I'm trying to get at, Gray, I wanted more from managers. I felt I wanted more. And I'd say that in front of them if they were there. Tactically, I didn't get enough from all my managers. Roy Hodgson was the first one to really open my mind. And I learned so much from him, especially now looking back. All my managers before that and after, were they good managers? I'm not saying they were bad managers, Gray. I'm just saying I want more. They was more worried about results, Gray. They was more worried about winning. They was more worried about getting in that final third and just causing aggro. I was more worried about the game. Do you get what I mean? The process of me learning as a football player. There was times, I told you before, Gray, I'd have arguments with Paul Jewell. If you was to ask Paul Jewell now, who's the hardest man? Jimmy is a nightmare. But I was the first on his team sheet, right? Ask him, if you ever see him, who's the first on your team sheet? Who's the best player you've ever had? I know he'd say Jimmy Bullard. And I know I'm saying Big Eddie because I used to drive him mad. I wanted to say, oh, I need more. That without that push, I don't believe we would have exceeded what we'd done. I don't believe we would have done what we'd done.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm here to tell you about another podcast. Yes, we believe in biodiversity. It's from the makers of The Big Interview, and it's called Between the Lines, the stories behind great sports writing. every episode takes a classic sports book or outstanding piece of sports writing and examines how the writer crafted their story. This is a weekly show, and the series so far has featured documentaries on The Miracle of Castel di Sangro and Andrea Pirlo's autobiography, I Think, Therefore I Play. There's also interviews with writers like Henry Winter, Simon Cooper, Andy Mitten, and David Goldblatt. This is Tim Parks on his classic tome, A Season with Verona.
The Bishop of Verona invited the citizens of Verona to burn the book because I'd put all the blasphemies in it. So that was obviously good for sales. You know, I was very, very pleased about that. I wish they'd done it. It would have been a happy memory.
I still think that the higher level you played that with the better coaches, the better footballer you'd have been. You and I met on the 25th of January, 2012, at a Clásico, which was a cup semi-final, where Barca took a lead from Madrid back and it ended up 2-2, blitzkrieg of a game. I'd taken Darren Fletcher out because he was recuperating from his operations or whatever. And we ended up singing Islands in the Stream across the bar at the Hotel Princess Sofia.
We had a few And
that's how I introduced Julian Ball Rodriguez, because we're in the last two sections of this interview, Jimmy, because, you know, Julian says, how difficult was it to adapt from playing at Gravesend to playing at West Ham? But I'm thinking about the journey from the chip shop and Gravesend to a luxury hotel in Barcelona, watching two beautiful teams play magical cup football 2-2. Of all the players we've talked about, including the Real Madrid and Barcelona legends that you adore watching, you never used the name Paulo Di Canio in your list of footballers that to rank with Zidane or with Riquelme. And maybe Paulo didn't win all the trophies they did, but people will forget that you signed on the same day as Paulo did for West Ham. And I watched Paulo in an interview recently. I don't know if you've seen it, but I know how clued up you are on things that you can pick up on the internet and YouTube. Paulo immediately said he remembered you and liked you, and he immediately said, brilliant set piece player, set piece taker, brilliant free kick taker. But he didn't have a dig, but you know what Paulo's like. He said, could have achieved a lot more, really good footballer. Does that mean, or is that typical of the Paulo that you knew? And having started at Gravesend and or having been at Gravesend before coming to West Ham, try and describe that, the man that you found there, less so for his eccentricities, but for the brand of footballer that he was.
So looking back, for me, coming from Gravesend to Gravesend and Northfleet to West Ham, there's such a big gap there from non-league to Premier League. You've got to imagine, Gray, I was a West Ham fan as well, so it's such a surreal moment. Me going almost claret and blue still on my walls to the boyhood club I love from non-league. There's so much jump there and scowl. It's almost, it's Roy the Rovers stuff. You don't like that. That's ridiculous, right? That does not happen. That you've got more chance, I would say, of near enough winning the lottery. Like, how does that happen? How does a boy from Gravesend Northfleet do that? Not only does that happen, I'll go on trial. Roger Cross was third in line, by the way. He turned up to a Gravesend Northfleet game. By the way, I wasn't playing that well at Gravesend. I hit a 3-4 week period where I was scoring goals. And Roger Cross was there, West Ham scout. And he come up to me, and we had a lot of characters there. And he come up to me and goes, son, do you want to try at West Ham? I thought he was one of the boys put him up for it. I thought, oh, come on, mate, behave. Like, who's put you up this? My mate Mitchell Crawley's a lunatic. I thought, he's up to me. I said, no, I'm not having that. He went, Jim, I'm not winding you up. You've got a trial at West Ham. I still didn't believe. Not having it. So I turned up at Chadwellieth Monday morning, 10 o'clock. Who's there? Paolo Di Canio's there. I didn't know Paolo. I'm a West Ham fan. He's there. He's there the first day. I'm there. Frank Lampard, Rio, they're all there. I'm on trial. I remember the first day Harry wanted to see what I had. He put me one-on-one with Frank Lampard. One-on-one, Gray, on a quadmire. I'm a 19-year-old boy in a 15-year-old's body. I'm thinking, one-on-one with Frank. Are you joking? Frank was a beast. He's absolutely tore me a new one. I've kept me own. Paolo's up next. I'm one-on-one with Paolo. Like, this is like, I'm going. I've got my dad watching in the car park, because back then, West Ham allowed punters to come in and watch training. My dad's there. I'm thinking, this is fucking mental. Like, how the fuck am I here? Like, I don't understand this process. Like, I'm just decorating on the Friday, Graham. I'm decorating on the Friday, and now I'm at my club. Today, I still don't realise what that was a total head fuck. So for me to answer any football questions in that is not possible. It's a total head fuck, right? So then all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, Harry gives me a 2-year contract. A 3-year pro contract. And this was brilliant. This is how good Harry was. I was in a canteen. He goes, you all right with your contract? 750 quid a week, sweet with that? I couldn't say yes or no, could I? I would have took £7.50. And he was like, sweet, son, if you're good enough, you'll get in my first team. The first thing he said to me, you need to get in the gym. You need to build up. Gray, I'm telling you, I lifted more weights than Jeff Capes. I couldn't put a muscle mass. I couldn't put a muscle mass. My body was too, I had too much energy. It wouldn't put on. I got more defined, but Harry's just seeing this brawny little kid. And the Premier League was more industrious. It needed stronger men. I get that. But then all of a sudden come this player, Paolo Di Canio. He signed the same day as me, as well as, remember Mark Vivian Foley, God bless him, who we lost.
Yeah, God bless his soul, yeah, yeah.
So I signed the same day as him, along with Gavin Holligan, who come along with Kingstonian, another non-league player. So it's me and him signed, Paolo. From that day, I sat next to Paolo for 3 years in the change room. Graham, what I learned from that man was not only football, was life around football. Now, the way you conduct yourself, the way you dress, the way you manner, like your manners around football. And people know Paolo as this loose cannon, like this absolute genius of a lunatic. Let me tell you something about that man. He thought so much about everything, every move he done, he thought about. He brought his own staff with him to West Ham to take the warm-up. You know, he see gaps in the market there. He see gaps in football. Oh, this ain't good enough, you know. And Harry sort of went with it. Okay, what you got? He sort of like, we had fish and chips on a Friday, mate. We was having fish and chips as a pre-match meal. Paolo, no. He changed everything about that club. He even changed. This is ridiculous. Do you remember West Ham, I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles?
Yeah.
A big theme too, like massive song, back to when my dad was a kid. Paolo changed the song and he brought out Paolo Di Canio. He come out to his own song. I'm not like this. It's unbelievable. But my dad, basically, I've got so much. It would almost be a different podcast, Gray. I've got so much about Di Canio, but there was one episode where I said, Dad, he sort of like was in the Frank McAvenny era. You know, Cotty, all back then. And I said, Dad, come and watch this.
Alan Devonshire. What a player.
Almost Bobby Moore as a kid growing up, real back in the day. And I went, Dad, watch this, come and watch this bloke, right? Unbelievable. And he went, no. I said, Dad, just come watch him. I dragged him to Upton Park one game. It was a night game under floodlights. It was when Paolo scored 2 goals. And he cut on the inside. Me and my dad were right behind it. He cut inside. He nutmegged the second midfielder. He gave a lollipop with his left peg. I remember it. You know when you can see things clear as a... And he cut inside. He bent his ball, right, honestly, into the far corner. My dad stood up and just gave him the biggest standing ovation. He was there 25 minutes, my dad, and he went... That's enough. Walked out and he said, that bloke. And he run around with his shirt. You know how he used to just go mad? And he run around with a shirt on his head, above his head. And my dad said, that's the best I've ever seen at West Ham. They're like phenomenal ball players. There's little things he done in that game. 25 minutes, Gray, he was there. My dad, I've seen enough. The man was magnificent.
I'm so glad you described it that way, Jim, because there's no arguing that Di Canio can be rated in terms of ultimate achievement with Zola and Schmeichel and Bergkamp, because for one reason or another, he didn't achieve as much as them. But in terms of across my life, the guys with the most extraordinary genius skill that I've seen, he's in that mix at least.
Yeah. Because
he was capable of outstanding technique, but mad maverick invention, or at least it looked like that. Maybe some of it's planned, but he saw pictures and was able to paint those pictures that nobody else around him at that time was seeing.
Ridiculous. He done stuff in training. Great, great. He had no pace whatsoever. He's probably the slowest player with the biggest amount of ability I've ever seen. He used to have, you know, the chop, like he used to chop players. Oh, wow. Like you'd go for it. I know it was coming. I'm like, I know you're going to chop this, but I've still got to block it. For some reason, you block it and he'd just go chop, chop, chop. He chopped so many players. Like, it was phenomenal. But there's one thing I noticed about Paolo. He definitely preferred to be a big fish in a small pond. He was one of them. That was a big exaggeration of a big fish in a small pond. If Paolo wasn't number one, if Paolo wasn't at the armband, if Paolo didn't wear the 10, if Paolo wasn't held as a king, you ain't got the same Paolo with that. And Harry knew that. Harry, that's part of management as well. You know, you talk about tactics all you want. Player, you know, we all talk about player management. Harry played him to perfection. There was time we had another nutcase, John Moncur at West Ham, right?
Like, stop throwing the ball there, because John comes up. We had the podcast with Scott Minto, who's at West Ham with you, and he talked about Moncur. And I've heard you talk about John before. And if you remember the guy who got on the team sheet a lot for West Ham, but I don't think that anybody outside the hardcore West Ham fan base have any idea about what kind of character he was.
Player, but hell of a footballer. He was a slight boy and learned away, and he was a great player. Not in Paolo's league, granted, but a great player for West Ham. But an absolute nutcase. The biggest nutcase I've ever met in football. Like, he done things. Like, him and Paolo, this is what I was going to kill. Harry had to play that very carefully. You imagine this as a team. Razor Ruddock, John Moncur, Paul Kitson, who was a lunatic, Steve Lomas, who was not right, Trevor Sinclair, then he brings Paolo Di Canio. Are you sure? Like, Ian Wright, have you got enough characters in that team? Like, you can't... How do you manage all that lot? Like, that's phenomenal. Like, and then you bring over Bevor Suka after he scored the chip. So every time he's training for West Ham, he thinks he can score a chip every 2 minutes. It used to drive Harry mad.
It's chips with everything, isn't it? At the canteen, chips with everything.
Honestly, he put chips upon chips. It's like ridiculous. And then his mate, who went in for presidency for Croatia, who's the big centre half.
Stimac.
But what I was going to get on, Harry managing John Moncur and Paolo, he had to put them in the same team all the time. Because if you give a free kick to Paolo, John would go off on one. If you give a free kick to John, Paolo would go off on one. It's absolute. Harry talks about it quite a lot, so he had to really manage these characters, which was phenomenal. But Paolo, great, wasn't he? It was just phenomenal to be around. I learned so much.
Now, before we let you back to the chrysanthemums and the garden and the slabs, I need to draw you on something where, again, I'm going to praise you, because when I was watching Soccer AM, when you were still playing, Soccer AM was really, really funny. And then I went through a phase where I couldn't watch it as much, and it changed, and it went to a different host. And the Soccer AM that I watch right now, I'd have to say that, you know, maybe there's a lack of some of the characters that were there. But the sections with you and Tubes, or Peter, if you want to call it, and Fenners, when any of you have got a football at your feet, when it's the drills around professional clubs, when it's out the back with the fans, one, you've reinvented it, the three of you, in a way that I think is hugely enjoyable, and I can't miss. And secondly, if you're not a better, more technical player now, even than you were then, when I see you doing the drills or filling the top bin in the goals and the things you're still doing with the ball, it absolutely buzzes with energy and love of the game. And I think you've reinvented Soccer AM in a way that it invigorates me. When I watch you all with the ball, and I'm talking about what you all do with the ball, particularly, and I said this to you, and Tubes, for an amateur player, I think he's got enormous
playing
the ball.
Yeah.
He's a player. Try and describe the process of what you three, not the sketch, not the guests, not the music, but when the three of you are on the ball or out at Crystal, what is the aim of what you're trying to do and how much are you enjoying it?
I was always close to Soccer AM anyway. I used to show a lot of my clips and this and that. So I've had a bit of a connection. I've been doing, you know, the drill now. First of all, we owe so much applause to Fenners. Fenners is the main driver of the show. You know, you've been around TV, right? What I think's good it isn't necessarily going to come out on TV good. Do you get what I mean? So TV is it's a whole different beast. So that's Fenners' game. What I know is football. Fenners has sort of got them together and gone, he's had the image really and gone, hang on, how can I make this work? How can Jimmy be at his best? Now, me being a presenter that I am now isn't me reading off the auto cue, Gray. I'm not going to be one of them reading off the auto cue like you see on Sky Sports. That isn't me. So he's got me over moving three or four cameras around me with a football, put me in a scenario that I'm comfortable with, away I go. And he describes it, we get magic. That's when we get magic. We don't know when we're going to get magic, but that's... So basically, me and Chews go out and do the drills. I think it's my 6th year doing, you know, the drill. The first ever drill we've done, Fenners wasn't sure how it was going to look, how it was going to pan out, but we asked Dean Saunders and Mark Crosley. We went up to, I believe it was Chesterfield. We went up to Chesterfield, got on a park, Dean Saunders got the goals out, put the mannequins, and that was our first drill. And from there, like everything, it sort of branched out. It found its own way. I found my own way. We've got our own little catchphrases. Before we know it, we call it bulldogging it up. We make an extension of ourselves. He says, bulldog it up more, Jim. It's too serious. I want it serious, but I want the kids to react to it. I want the... It takes time. It takes a bit of nurture. It changes every year. Now we're going around these phenomenal clubs. Been with Rakitic and Rivaldo and all over the world. Celtic, Rangers, at these huge clubs. Been at their training grounds to show what we can give. And you saying about what I've got, I'm always asking questions. When's too old, Gray? If you're still doing it and you still look like you can... I'm 41, but I still feel like I can play in tight areas. The hard thing is you've got such a wide audience there. Where do you stop? Do you get what I mean? And Fenners would go, just keep it as general as we can, Jim. So that's what we try and do. Keep it as general. Sometimes you'll see me going in a nitty gritty and Fenners would go, more, more, more. That'd do. And that's management. You know, he'll put the reins on it or he'll let me go. But another thing that I've learned is to get it across, there's a camera there. At first, Gray, I was turning my back on camera. They couldn't hear me. I didn't know. Like, I'm a footballer. And over time, become really friendly with this camera. I've become myself. You know, I sort of started like stiffening up a little bit and like talking a bit different. And in the end, I thought, fuck this, it can only work if I'm gymming. Over time, Fenner's taught me how to like position my body. Basically, there's an audience there, present for them. I'm still learning now, Gray. I'm still learning. You know, every time I go on that show, from it's such a well-oiled machine, that show. Yap Stam come on the other week and he wrote an amazing piece on his social media. Said, I couldn't believe how well-oiled machine Soccer Am was. The professionalism, the quality and the laughs as well. And it's a right big mixture we got in. And that's down to, I'm going to tell you now, not me, Tubes, yeah. Finish, and the producer Darius and all the boys in there. I'm very much of a free spirit. They let me do what I want to do. Have I learned a lot? Yes, but they've taught me so much because TV wasn't my game.
You love football so much and you've got such a brain, which is part of why we agreed to do this, because I think it's commonly known that you're really quick-witted and all the cheeky chappy stuff, that doesn't even cover it, because you're sharp mentally, you're funny verbally, and your character oozes out. And as far as I'm concerned, the more people like that in football there are, the better, because we see a lot of automatons and robots. So that's fine, right? You're naturally like that. But we both know that you're a proper thinker about football and you've got strong ideas. Do you think you'll ever find the urge so strong that you go back and reapply that to football in some form or other? I'm talking about necessarily I've got to be a manager or a coach, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Or do you think that you've found satisfaction in the way that the camera loves you sufficiently that you don't need to go back to the game?
I ask this question to myself all the time, right? First of all, people don't realise how much they think I'm this joker, they think I'm this character, a bit of a wild character. Trust me, I don't believe I would have achieved what I achieved if I wasn't a deep thinker of it. So that's answered that. Let's put that away. The second piece, I went on that show, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, The Jungle. Now, that was the first show I ever went on after football, and I believe that, I don't think, if I didn't do that show, I don't believe I'd have gone into TV as much as I have done. So has that given me a different path? Yes. Has that sort of showed the extension of Jimmy Bullard, the Joker? Yes. Has that scared off a lot of chairmen? I believe a manager's in me. I've got too much. I honestly believe it. But the more I go down this path, the more I'm scared of, I need a strong chairman to back me. Because at the minute, I'm this joker character that wild. I'm a little bit wild. I know that. I'm not silly. People portray me as that. I know I'm a bit different. I think different outside the box. But I think it takes a strong manager to give Jimmy Bullard a manager job. Now, I don't care whether that's non-league or professional. I've done a non-league stint. I don't really want to go into non-league because it wasn't enough for me. I can only train twice a week. If I ever go into management, and I believe I can only ever manage, I think my thoughts on football are too strong to be an assistant. I'd have to be under a manager that believes my way. Otherwise, I'd be arguing. I'd be tug-of-warring with him that an assistant can't do. He needs to be glued to his manager. So, in a way, I need to be under a manager that really has my beliefs and vice versa, or a strong chairman's coming back at Jimmy Bullard. Great, the question's out there to be asked. Am I going to be doing TV soccer around forever? No. Do I believe I can manage? Yes. To which level? I don't know. You know, there's 100 questions got to be asked there. But the more I do it, the more I think, and I hope I'm wrong, that I'm sort of knocking myself out of a management job. Do you get what I mean by that? I'm sort of going down a different route. If I ever had the moment to sit down in front of a board and chairman, I could sway their opinion if they give me that opportunity.
There's three things I think to summarise this here. Number one, we've seen just like glimpses on the drill that you can coach. Two, it's patent that when you want to, you can interact and read people. You can man manage, and I think three, I'd pay to watch the brand of football you would ask your team to play, and then after that, there's a million things. The wind in your face when you're a coach or a manager at any level is gigantic, and you need, you know, the right people, you need the right resources, you need a little bit of luck, blah, blah, blah. But it would sadden me if at some stage we don't see you applying what you believe to a football club at some level. And just like I said about you as a player, I think the higher level at which you coach, there's some people who are born to say, right, I can take this raw material and work it all the way up. And there are some people where it's better to skip the steps and say, right, we're talking the same language already. Let's get down to it and I'll make you better. Now, it looks to me that that's where you should be. So I will close this by saying, Jimmy, this has been a privilege that I expected it to be, because I admire you as much for your wit. But I knew that we shared a love of football that would come out in this podcast. So I'm indebted to you for taking so much time and listening with patience to my questions. And our listeners will have loved having Jimmy Bullard on the Big Interview. So, Jim, thank you.
Thank you, God. No, I've loved it so much.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.